Meeple Might, episode 14, a podcast rolls with it. Welcome to Meeple Might, a podcast about board games past, present, and future. In today's episode, we discuss our recent plays, review Rolling Realms from Stonemaier Games, and finish off by discussing our favorite Roll and Rights. I'm Andrew Caprell, and here's my co-host, Josh Knight.
Good evening, everyone. And Andrew and I were just discussing how fitting of a name for this podcast being Roll With It after the experience Veronica and I had post-wedding. Because, Andrew, you can admit, the wedding actually went pretty smoothly, all things considering.
Yeah, it did. It did. Well, I mean, it rained, but that's supposed to be good luck for a wedding. And it wasn't like, oh my gosh, uncomfortable rain or anything, you know? It's like a nice, just enough to be lucky.
Yeah, our photographer made us feel better by saying she did a wedding where it was raining so bad, the one of the bridesmaids' mascara ran like a linebacker. Yeah, so that went smoothly.
Yeah, it did, and was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's more than we can say for the honeymoon that we had planned. So no thanks to American Airlines. I'm going to go ahead and say nobody should fly that un-American airline. But we rolled with it on down to Disney and Universal Studios in Orlando instead.
Yeah, so what was the deal with that? Because I mean, I was expecting Jamaica, as were you, obviously. And then Nicole showed me pictures of you and Disney, and I was like, what?
Surprise.
Did they tag that on?
Nope.
So what happened?
So we were going to fly out November 1st, which was the huge federal mandate that everyone had to be vaccinated by. And as a result, airlines were starting to be canceled on Sunday, as well as that Monday, November 1st.
Oh, because like employees...
Yep. So they canceled our connecting flight from Richmond to Charlotte, and they American Airlines sent a text message and said, we will reply back to you with a plan. Perfect. 9 hours later, there was no plan. So I sent a message of stating, I'll drive to Charlotte. Just guarantee me on that plane. I got no reply back to this. Everything looked like it was fine. So we woke up at the butt crack of dawn and started driving. 4 hours later, we get to Charlotte. We went to go check our bag, and that's when they said, surprise, your flight actually is November 3rd, not today, the 1st. And they said the flight to Jamaica on November 1st was full. So we were bumped off of our flight. So at that point, extremely frustrated. My face was blood red, and I took that frustration out by driving 8 hours from Charlotte to Orlando. That's what normal human beings do. Yep.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it looked like you had a fun time, though.
We did.
For what it was.
Yeah, we had a good time. We had massages. We went to the amusement parks. The first night we got there, we went to a T-Rex themed restaurant at Disney Springs. Yep.
We know that had to go well.
It did. I don't think Veronica had as good a time there as I did, feeling like a 12-year-old boy, as evidenced by all the dinosaur board games I've played. But... you know, we rolled with it. And speaking of which, rolling, why don't we roll into some of the games we've been playing? I haven't seen you other than the wedding, so what have you actually gotten to the table?
Sure. So, well, I was reading a lot of not board game rule books, but I did manage to get some games in. So, I am almost done with the Wheel of Time. I'm imagining you didn't get as much reading done as it turns out.
Sadly, no.
With that trip, but no, yeah. But so my theme for this week is going to be apps and digital games, because mostly, that's entirely the games that I played. And it was... All right. Yeah, so the first one that I'm going to talk about is Onirim, which is part of a series called the Oniverse. I don't know. Have you played any of these games?
I haven't, but I know they're good in the solo community. Yeah. And Z Garcia from Dice Tower loves them.
Yeah. Yeah. So Onirim, I think they're all published by I don't know how to pronounce his name or her name, Shadi Torbi. I couldn't find a pronunciation. And published by Z-Man or Asmodee. And yeah, like you said, I don't know if they're all solo. I think a couple of them play two players, but Onirim is solo only, at least on the app. And it's basically like you're some sort of dream walker or dream venturer or something. It kind of is thematic. And there's eight doors that you need to get through in order to escape the dream world. And there's a deck of cards. I don't know how many there are because it's an app. And there's nightmares in there. And when nightmares come out, they kind of reshuffle the deck and screw everything up for you. And yeah, in order to get out, you have to play three cards of the same color in a row. But when you're playing cards, you can never play the same symbol in a row. Cards are keys, moons, suns, or doors. Hmm. I don't think you can play doors, though, actually. So... It's kind of a fun little variation on solitaire, a little more thinky. I like it as an app. It's not one that I would necessarily buy, I don't think, because it's just not something I'd want to set up and manage having to reshuffle every time a nightmare deck comes out, that kind of thing. Yeah. But I know I got it for free. I just don't know that whether it was a promotion when it was released or if it's free every so often or if it's always free and like it, you just have to pay for the more advanced game. But I would recommend checking it out if you like playing digital games, basically. And I think this is one of this one and the last one, Arion. I think those are the two more highly rated ones in the series. I mean I know individuals will vary, but I think that's what I've heard.
Well, it sounds interesting. I literally just pulled up because I've got a few app games now, Through the Ages, yeah. Root, and I think that's the only two I currently have. Jeff's been trying to get me to play Gloomhaven Digital on Steam.
Oh, yeah. That just got released, the full version. Yep. I don't know if you read the email that said Frosthaven's almost done, maybe, probably, hopefully, possibly.
Yeah, that's... Well, it sounds interesting. I will admit, though, that Mike Delisio from Dice Tower did say that only the Oniverse things was on the Z Garcia is wrong list, that it should not be praised. Yeah. And I tend, within that content yep. creator realm, I tend to agree more with Mike Delisio than most. So,
yeah, I mean, it's not what I would consider like. So this was kind of what I chuckled about is in the rules. It says it's a solitaire game, yeah. And that's not like the phrasing anybody uses anymore. So that's kind of it came out in 2010. Hmm. So that was, you know, it came out to be an evolution of solitaire.
Gotcha.
You know, not a board game that's playable by yourself.
Gotcha.
So,
and it's also one of those that somebody that, like myself, that's cult of the new, maybe not won't enjoy it.
Yeah, maybe. But you know, I know you like old games, even though you pretend not to.
Some of them. Well, my theme, talk about old games, has nothing to do with that. This theme tonight is all the new ones because,
all right,
the theme is Kickstarter fulfillment. So
games that Josh owns, got it.
I buy plenty of retail. But these are ones that have come in, and my general rule as soon as we get a Kickstarter, we want to get it to the table pretty quickly. One of my three games tonight that I did not meet that criteria, but let's talk about the first one. So this is Set a Watch, designed by Mike Gnad, Todd Walsh, and Rock Manor Games. Sorry, Mike, I definitely butchered your name. In this game, you are adventurers set to stay alive in the wilderness as you keep your campfire bright while the rest of the team fights creatures you can barely see. You're going to use four characters to defeat waves of monsters who manage to stay single file. They're really disciplined. You're going to use melee or range characters, all with special abilities. Well, unless they are hurt, in which case you're going to start losing some of those special abilities because you don't have health. You just have those abilities. It wasn't terribly hard to learn, And I think it actually played a little bit longer than I would have preferred. And I initially thought it was a good game, but I played it again today. It is slowly slipping down that list. This went from a good game that I think it's okay, but I wouldn't recommend it to many people. A lot of people say that this was a great solo game. I don't know who these people are because they were wrong. Yeah. I think I would rather play it with others and see. Yeah. But this is one of those I just told Veronica, I'm going to put it away. I'll play it in a couple of months. And if it still is not to my liking, it's gone.
Yeah. Yeah. So I have not played this physically, but while it was on Kickstarter, I played the tabletop simulator because I saw it on Rotto and I was like, oh, my gosh, this looks so cool.
Yeah.
And my brother and I think he used to play D&D with me. And I think one of the nights when it was canceled, I was like, hey, let's just try this out because it looks easy enough to learn. And that's exactly how I felt. The first round or two, I was like, oh, this is cool. And then I don't remember how many rounds it goes, but I was like,
eight.
This is way too many rounds.
Yeah.
I am tired of this game.
Yeah.
that was my, there wasn't enough meat and decision making or like, I don't know, reward maybe for how long it goes.
Yeah, agreed.
But I only played the one time and it was also on Tabletopia, which is already going to hurt it because I just don't like Tabletopia that much.
Well, you're not missing much. This is one of the few games I mentioned in the banter that's actually a miss.
Well, you know, you gotta be fair. You can't only be mean to the review games.
Paleo.
All right. Well, my second one is also digital. Everything is digital, but Ascension, the deck building game.
Nice.
So deck building is something we've talked about. I don't know. Have you played this? I don't know, digital or in person?
No, but I'm curious because Ascension looks like it's a great, I don't know what you would call it. It looks like they've got a good system in place and it looks more appealing than say another deck builder like Hero Realms, Star Realms, and they have Ascension Tactics now with miniatures.
Oh, I didn't see that.
But sorry to just go off.
No, you're good. You're good. No, please. That is the joy of podcasting.
Tangents.
So this is designed by John Fiorio, Justin Gary, and Brian M. Kibler. Maybe it's Kibler. But these guys were all former Magic the Gathering champions. So they are definitely card/deck building minded. There's a few games that not published by them, but I think Star Realms and Hero Realms are also published by a Magic champion. So basically this is kind of like any deck builder. You spend runes, which is what they use instead of money, to buy cards, which you're trying to get better cards that you combo off of each other, which this kind of has a, you know, like magic-ish feel where, you know, there's brown cards, or I think they're called mechana. I don't remember all the terms. That's the struggle I have when I play digital, is it doesn't all sync in with me as well because the app does so much of the rules for me. But the combos are kind of based on card type. And then the other way you can get points, which are called honor points, is by defeating monsters. So you spend attack points, which are on the bottom of some cards, which usually are like a weapon or soldiers or something. So this one, I think, depends on my mood. I think this doesn't do anything new or crazy that other deck builders don't do for me. It could also just be because of the order that I've played this in. You know, like I have played a lot of other deck builders before I played Ascension. And this week's not the first time I've ever played it. And I know that this has a big, like every year there's a release for it. There's tournaments at a lot of conventions. So there is a big following and competitive group to it. But it's not necessarily, well, I mean, it's definitely not my favorite deck builder. There's nothing wrong with it. It's not bad. It's just not my favorite. I do want to try out some of the pirate themed ones.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of one of the cool things that Ascension does, is it explores a lot of themes because it does. I think they're on year 11 or 12 or something like that. Maybe more than that. But with a new theme every year, basically. And they kind of do cycles. So they kind of might like explore a theme for 3 years and then go to a new one. So like Pirates is the current one. I think they're on, they've done two of those. Yep. And so, and those sets will work off of each other. So you can combine those sets together. You could technically combine every set, I think, theoretically. I don't know that that would be advised because, and this is the one thing I don't like about it that much, is that it's a river system of cards.
Yeah.
It's not, so, yeah, you know, more like Clank and less like Dominion in that sense. But I think in the base game, it's okay. It doesn't get too weeded down or whatever. It doesn't have the Harry Potter problem where you need a, like, there's three cards that are awesome.
Yeah.
What is it? The book, Hogwarts of History. Like, if you don't have Hogwarts of History, you're going to lose starting in year five or whatever. But yeah.
Yeah.
That's kind of my thoughts on it.
Ascension looks interesting. I wish they had an actual dedicated solo that you could play the base game solo. Because that's a huge...
You can on the app.
Yeah.
But it's... Yeah.
I don't know.
But it's an app.
Deck building games, I think I need a physical one, right? It's just I really enjoy playing Dominion, but I don't think I would ever want to play it on an app because it literally is shuffling of those cards. While it can be redundant after you do it so many times, it's still that feeling, that tactile sense of shuffling, especially if you've sleeved the cards. There's just something about it. And
no, I agree. And I get more into the engine. I understand my engine more for whatever reason. I don't know what it is, but I just touching the cards and manually reading them and picking them up and putting them in for whatever reason.
I've looked up Ascension multiple times and I'm like, oh, this is a great game. I'm like, oh, wait, it's not solo. I've done it multiple times. And the Ascension Tactics actually does have a solo feature, which is interesting, but I don't know if I want to go down the rabbit hole necessarily when I have some other deck builders that work. But alas, my next game of my Kickstarter fulfillment is not a deck builder. Oh, wait. Yes, it is. This game is Rescuing Robin Hood, which is designed by Bryce.
I haven't heard of this one.
Yeah. Bryce Hall and published by Castillo Games. We're going to use the Spanish pronunciation there with the double L's being a Y. Anyways, this gringo is going to get back to describing this game, which is where Robin Hood has been captured and the support characters like Friar Tuck, Maid Marian, and standard town folk people must save him in this deck building game with a push or luck element. Now, believe it or not, Veronica was the driving force to back this game. I distinctly remember last December that we were looking at some Kickstarter projects and she saw the art for this and was like, this is great. You should support this. Looked at the price and it was reasonable. Cool. So actually it was on my like save with a 48-hour reminder.
Yeah. Like the heart.
Yep.
Yeah.
And she saw it and was like, you should back that. That looks great. This looks like it's right up your alley. So turns out she was right. She got me to purchase a really cool game. So I've played it solo and this is another game that I think is fine at solo, but I think I might prefer it with more than one player. So since Veronica was the one that kind of suggested purchasing it, I'm excited to play it with her. But overall, I think it's a really enjoyable game that's going to stay in the collection because it's a simple yet fun deck building experience.
Yeah.
And the best part, there's actually a townsfolk card named Jeffrey Miller with the correct spelling of Jeff. So I sent it to him and that's, he thought I was like making it up, that I wrote it in there. Yeah, it's funny.
Wow, that's crazy. Yeah, because that's not like a common way that I'm thinking of spelling Jeffrey. I guess maybe in England or medieval England. I don't know.
Yeah.
That is how the Jeff, what's his name? I thought that's how his name is spelt in the Robin Hood movie with, why the heck, Russell Crowe.
Oh.
There's a Jeffrey in that, I thought, Sir Jeffrey.
Hmm.
Maybe not. I'll have to look it up in a little bit.
The only Robin Hood movie I remember is Men in Tights.
What about the Disney one with the foxes and the badgers and the lion?
Forgettable.
What? Oh, my God. Get out of here. No. Do 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 do.
Get out of here!
I'm looking up.
Absolutely forgettable.
The name of Robin Hood, Sir Jeffrey, is that a real thing? Do 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 do. That's also really. Yeah. It Sir Jeffrey Clare.
All right, we'll call Jeff Sir Clare now.
All right. So my last game is one that I have played the physical copy, but it is not what I played this week. It is Evolution, designed by Dominic Krapuchet, Dmitry Knorr, and Sergey Mashin. I don't actually know if that's how Sergey pronounces his last name. I'm getting lazy now, I guess. Published by North Star Games. So Evolution's a game where you are managing species and they basically are just trying to eat and survive and deal with the other species that the other players are creating, because you can have herbivores or carnivores, and then you can get different traits that make it harder to attack you. So like herbivores could get herding, and then herding makes it so that if you have more population than I think the size of the carnivore, then the carnivore can't attack you. Or you can get a long neck, and that lets you get one food before the feeding phase. So I'm not going to go into too many details of it. It's not a very complex game, and it's a, in my opinion, very highly thematic. I really enjoy this game anytime I've played it in person. The caveat being that I have Evolution Climate in person, and I do like having, I think, did you play this with us or no?
No,
I know
you guys.
I think we were playing at a different table when you were.
You played it. Yeah. I can't remember what we ended up playing, but yeah, I remember you guys playing it.
Yeah. So Climate makes it so that, that basically on your turn, you draw to a certain number of cards based on whatever your hand size is supposed to be. And then you have to play one card to the middle to be the feeding pile. And cards have, I think it's on the top left, they have a number inside of a leaf that says how much food goes into the center. And then if you're playing with the climate expansion, it also has suns or snowflakes. And then based on however, if there's more sun than snowflakes, the temperature or the climate goes up one towards heat. And if it goes, if there's more snowflakes, it goes down one towards cold. And then there's traits like extra fur or fat stores and stuff, things that can help you do better in the heat or do better in the cold. And the first couple times we played it, we did it wrong. We did it like we went up the number of heats that the difference was. Yeah. So like if there was five more suns than snowflakes, we'd go up like five. And that made for a very swingy game where basically you were either in the ice age or like the globe was melting. all the population's gone.
So Al Gore was right.
The next day, gone.
Wow.
Yeah, in that version. So that one, yeah. I definitely prefer Climate. I am not a huge fan of the app. This is for a similar reason of the or that we were talking about with deck builders, that I just have this disconnect when I'm playing the digital game, that I don't have a good sense of what everybody's creatures are at the table.
Yep.
And if you don't have a sense of what everybody's stuff is doing, then this game is not really that fun.
Yeah.
Because that is the game, is adapting your creatures to be better at surviving based on what everybody else has. So yeah, not great implementation for me on the app, but I also prefer Climate over the base game, and the base game was all that was available.
Gotcha.
For free. So
what about Oceans?
Oh yeah, I haven't played Oceans yet. I think you have Oceans, right?
Yep, we have it. We haven't played any of them.
Oh man. Yeah, I do want to try Oceans. I think it was the deep aspect of it seems cool. Mm-hmm. Like there's really special trait cards, or they're all unique.
They're
or
all unique.
Right?
Yep, and there's
That's
a bunch of them. At least in the Kickstarter, there's a stack of them.
Yeah, which I could see both ways. Right, I could see that being frustrating, where there might be this one unique one that it's not necessarily overpowered if you consider the whole deck, but like the way they come out that game, it might feel overpowered. And so I don't know if like that would be my worry about them. Yeah. But I also know that I would like, you know, I mean, just like I like Bruges or any of the Terraforming Mars, those games where you're digging through stacks of thick cards and just like going through all the different possible combos.
Yeah.
And so
yeah, the ocean one looks more interesting, although for the birthday list that I gave Veronica, these are games that I'd like for you to teach me. The base game Evolution made the list. She had actually started to learn it one night and fell asleep, and then she just gave up and chose Imhotep instead. So I don't know if we're ever going to play Evolution, because I don't know. We'll see. But it looks like a fun game. I remember you guys having fun that night when I was over. And I mean, it was enough for me to at least read into it. It looked interesting enough to buy a bunch of them.
Do you have that Evolution game?
I have Evolution, Climate, and Oceans. The only one I don't have is the Flight, which is out of stock. And I think it's out of print, out of stock.
And from my understanding, is not like you're not supposed to combine all of them.
Yeah.
Like you're supposed to play base game plus one.
Yeah.
Or something like that. So you just play with Climate or just Flight or whatever the other one is.
I think that's it.
Oh, just those two?
Yeah.
Okay.
I could be wrong. I mean, I'm not an expert at Evolution since I've never played it.
Oh, I'm not an expert either. But anyway, sorry. What's your last game for the week?
All right. So this is the one that breaks the Kickstarter rule of as soon as we get it, we play it. And this is a game for science! Exclamation point. Mm. We got it a couple of months ago, and we only just got around playing it. Now, the box has the designer's name on it, and I knew the designer's name looked familiar. It's Eric Russ. Or Russ.
Oh, yeah. We reviewed something that he did. Or I just talked about it.
You have mentioned a game that he has designed before. It made your top 10. Geez.
I mean,
it's fine.
I'm gonna be embarrassed.
It's fine. I'm gonna go ahead and say it. It's Spirit Island.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Duh. But this one is not published by Greater Than Games. As Spirit Island is. This is a Gray Fox production.
Yeah.
So this game, I actually think it might have been a bad call on our part to wait so long, because we actually did enjoy playing this. So this game is actually about designing a vaccine, building said vaccine with wooden blocks, and then using pattern shapes to complete the cure. Now, that sounds very meta, but it's great nowadays with the virus that we currently are fighting.
Yeah.
But it's hard to describe, but it's fun to play. And this is actually one of the first cooperative games we have played in a long time, because there's no way anybody can alpha or dominate the gameplay, because there's a 15-minute timer. And there's so much to do that everyone must truly work together, as you'd expect in a game like this.
Yeah.
So the oddest part about this game, though, is the box is huge for a 15-minute game. And a lot of that's just because of all the wooden components and everything that's in it. Now, I'm going to go ahead and highlight, Veronica is way better than me at this game. She was amazing using the blocks, balancing different stuff. And I was only successfully able to build two things. She built like at least six. She was the reason we won the game. Literally on the last build, we won the game. And it was all thanks to her. So I think this is another game that it'll never break into my top games list. But I'm glad we have it. It's different.
Yeah.
It's very unique. It's enjoyable. And it's one of those with the 15 minutes. It's easy to remember the rules. This is something we can bring out. Hey, we just need a stupid game. We don't feel like using our brains too much. Let's just put this into play and enjoy ourselves. And as we did last night, we were knocking wooden blocks all over the floor and whatnot. Cheddar was trying to grab them. It was a true family effort.
You got to be careful when you say you don't have to use your brains too much and you're talking about making vaccines, because, you know, people might take that out of context. Ugh. Hearing that from a doctor, you know, there's a lot of fake news out there nowadays.
Fake news in this game. But then again, the doctor here sucked at this game. So let's also highlight that aspect.
Yeah. No, that sounds cool. And yeah, that seems like a cool theme, because I know like one of the pandemic expansions has some sort of virus like side thing that you do, and that seemed like a cool... I never played it.
For the Cure, I think, is that one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But and yeah, the theme of that seems kind of neat.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's, I think for the right price, it's something I would recommend. I don't know what was Kickstarter exclusive, what wasn't. I think this game kind of fell a little bit to that Kickstarter bloat that they just kept throwing in a bunch of stuff. I don't think we'll ever use it. I think the base game was fine, especially for a little quick experience like we got.
And it overcame the Gray Fox saltiness. So, you know, that's good.
We'll leave that.
I mean, you liked it despite, I'm saying, even though you're salty about Gray Fox, you still liked the game.
Yeah, it's fine. I'll credit the designer, not the publisher.
Yeah, I know. I know.
Well, why don't we roll into our review game?
Today we review Rolling Realms, designed by Jamie Stegmeier and published by Stonemaier Games. In Rolling Realms, players compete to earn the most stars in a series of minigames across the Stonemaier Games universe, from Viticulture to Red Rising and My Little Side to Tapestry. It's all covered. As some background, Jamie designed this as a way to play an infinitely scaling game that could be played entirely remote during the COVID pandemic. And it was not originally intended for print until the masses demanded it. Was he correct to acquiesce to their demands, or should Rolling Realms have been left unpublished?
Well, after that excellent introduction, I kind of want to throw in acquiescence or something to this rules teach, but sadly, I left that off my script. So let's actually learn how to play Rolling Realms. So in this game, everyone will receive 11 realms, a resource card, and a round card. The game is played over 3 rounds, where you are trying to gain as many stars as possible. Each round consists of rolling the 2 dice a total of 9 times. To start, one person will randomly select 3 realms, which everyone will use this round. Roll the dice and simultaneously use 1 die in each realm. Thus, each turn you will be ignoring 1 of the 3 realms. Don't worry, though, because in addition to gaining stars, you can gain resources that you can spend to adjust a die, reuse a die, reuse a realm, and other possibilities. These bonuses gained via spending resources can even be compounded, so you could reuse a die in a realm you've already used. As for each realm, they are all different mini-games based on games within the Stonemaier publishing arm. Won't go into too much detail other than to say that each mini-game is somewhat modeled after the game it's titled after. After the 9th turn, add up your stars and excess resources, which are going to be worth 0.1 point, not 1 point, Veronica, 0.1, for the total of that round. Then erase all 3 realms and all the resources to prepare for the next round, or add up the 3 round scores for your total. There's a lot of variation in scores, but I think a score greater than 40 is a good score, thus target greater than 13 stars per round.
Yeah, I actually don't even remember what our scores were. I was looking over to see if I could get it, and I forgot. It's a dry erase board, so no way to know. All right, yeah, so thanks for the rules overview, Josh. So we'll start with our first impressions and aesthetics of the game. So I'll start. First impressions for me actually came from a lot of hype that he was just emailing out. Is on Instagram a lot too, if you follow him on Instagram, which I know you do. Yep. And part of the what do they call it? Is it Heroes? Stonemaier Champions was getting emails for that. So I was pretty pumped for this game, especially it's a pretty low price point. And usually the Stonemaier games I have liked have been in the lighter fare of what he does. Hmm. So like the Viticulture, the Wingspan. Those are ones I've liked. Scythe was one that I didn't like, though I do want to try it again because the caveat was I played it at 6 player.
Oh my God.
And there was one more that I'm forgetting, but Red Rising, I like it. I know you're not a fan, but So the lighter stuff is ones I've liked for him. So I was pretty much anticipating this. The dice are chunky and nice. Otherwise, I don't really have much as far as aesthetics go.
Yeah. Well, we'll get into the dice in a second, but I love the use of the laminated cards. Now, that reminds me of silver and gold, and it makes it so easy to clean up and whatnot. But also, it was the only way of doing it. You couldn't have done print. You couldn't have had sheets that you just tore off.
Right,
and you
for the cards,
on.
Yeah.
So laminated cards was perfect. So the dice, I think they're too big. No, seriously, they don't roll very well.
Yeah, that's probably true. We did have, I think, the same... That happened a couple rounds where like the same three numbers came
up
the whole time.
That's the issue. So I'm no dice expert. I have never played D&D, so I don't sit there and look at all the different dice packs and be like, really excited. But this is a roll and write, and the rolling isn't very good. I think they're more gimmicky than functional. I think it's a miss. I would have rather have had traditional, maybe you could have increased it a little bit in size, but give me good rolling die. I don't, that was a turnoff for me. And the other thing that was a little bit of a turnoff, I'm curious to see your response to it, is the art. I like the art on the box, but if you ever look at a card, there's no art on it. It looks prototype farm. Yeah. It's missing.
Yeah.
I would have wanted just something, even if it was just a splash of color or something. I needed something else on those cards. And believe it or not, Mike D'Alessio from Dice Tower, his review went up today, and he said the exact same thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is a comment you've said a couple times about how it looks like a prototype or a print and play. Like, I mean, that is kind of what the cards look like. I don't know that the art means much in this game anyways, but I guess, like just to add some flavor to the universe that you're in for that mini game.
Just something
would have been neat because just adding the little mech from scythe to the scythe finger. I mean, you already have the art. It's already commissioned.
Yep.
Like literally just take the same one on the box cover. That's a good point.
That's all you needed to do. So
yeah,
might sound like I'm a little down on it. So let's move to a positive of this game. And that's actually the rules, because I think it's very quick to learn. I didn't watch a single YouTube video of how to play this game. And the only complaint that I saw online was that some people would say if you had a question about a rule, what was written on the card was essentially the same thing written verbatim in the rule book. They might have changed like a few things, but it's still the rule book didn't clarify the card, and it confused others. We didn't have that issue, but I just kind of add that in from doing my research on social media.
Yeah, there was, now that you say that, that reminded me that there was a rule we weren't sure about, and I do not remember what it was. It was something about the way that the combo worked for one of the, I'm not going to find it this fast, but it didn't seem super clear. But, I mean, this is a light enough game that I think if you just have people agree on what it is, you know, it's not an end of the world situation, but I guess that's a fair critique. I think they usually do a good job of rules though for Stonemaier Games. They pay to actually have it done right and reviewed. And I mean, it's aesthetics, but he's always got that nice, linen rule book. Yeah.
Yeah. He does a good job with that. So what'd you think of the theme though? You kind of mentioned it a little bit with art, but what did you think of theme and setting?
Did I mention the theme in the discussion when I gave the theme background? The only positive, I don't think that this sets out to be a super thematic game anyways. So I don't know that this is bad for the game. This isn't like a game that says, oh, let's do this super thematic tour of the Stonemaier games and like you're going to feel like you're in each universe. That's not what it says. So I don't know if it's a detraction, but there's not really a theme here. It doesn't need to be a theme. Only a couple of the realms even feel that thematic to me. Red Rising, I think, is thematic. Pendulum, not really. I mean, only because they drew hourglasses on it.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
The Between Two Castles and Between Two Cities felt thematic.
Yeah.
And there was one other one. Scythe the Knot to me. And I mean, maybe there's a way that you can explain it.
So I'm going to...
Tapestry, I think, was the other one.
Yeah. So I think some of the realms, like you said, are perfect. So Tapestry, let's talk about Tapestry. I think it's very similar to the original game because you're using those polyomino shapes to fill in regions, just like on your own personal board with the, what are the build, like the buildings and all that, monuments and all stuff in monuments, the actual game. Yeah. So, and you mentioned Between Two Castles. I thought that seemed very similar. I haven't played the base game, the original game, but that seemed thematic. All right, so Scythe. Let's talk about Scythe because I think that was very weird. So this is how you do it.
Thematic.
Is you, I get what they're going for because if you whatever die you use, you're going to gain a resource at the top, and then you could potentially pay a different resource to capture the star below that. So in my mind, in Scythe, you've got your player board. You have your action that you're going to use at the top that is guaranteed action every single time. And then if you have the resources to pay for the bottom more powerful action, you can do that too. I think that's what he was going for.
Okay.
But I think it was haphazard. I think this was a little bit of a miss. If that's truly what he, you know, I'm trying to get inside of Jamie's mind at this point. So I think that one was a little hard to understand. And it was even harder to understand the rules for that if you haven't played Scythe. So that was one of those I thought was a little bit of a miss. The theme actually hurt the rules in that case. But overall, I think the rest of them, they did just fine.
Yeah. All right. So rolling past that, how about some gameplay? I don't know. So this, we played it at 2-player and 3-player. So I never know where to throw that out. So I'll throw that out here.
Who was the third?
Brian.
Oh, nice. Barisi. Okay.
Yeah. So we, there's not, I mean, I think it accomplishes the infinitely scaling well, to comment on that. I think that it doesn't play any different at 2 than it does at 3, which makes sense because you're just rolling dice and picking them, which is something I'm always worried about. Like everybody doing the same thing, but never happens. So I don't know why, but it's not an actual thing to be worried about. I like the interaction of how when certain realms come out, it can change the way that they interact, right? So like the My Little Scythe one, I think is the one that when that one comes out, I feel like I have all the resources in the world that I need because it's very easy to get them. But when the Scythe one comes out, I have no resources that round because I'm spending them all the time to try and get the stars.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, those are just little things, but, those then can kind of change how you play the game because you might not have the pumpkins that you need to. What is, pumpkins like reroll, right? Nah, I don't remember what they all
no,
are.
No, pumpkins allow you to adjust the die by one,
adjust the values,
or reuse
adjust
a die or that's reuse right. a realm, rather.
Yeah. 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 So, you know, it can kind of change that up. Yeah. So that's kind of, I like the different interactions. I like the simplicity of the mechanism.
Yeah.
Of the just rolling a dice, pick where they go.
And that's what I wrote for mechanisms, the simplicity. Roll, period, and write, period. Yeah. It doesn't, right? It doesn't overcomplicate it. Now, it does a little add that little bit of resource management, but that's nice because it offers you to mitigate some of those dice rolls, especially if the die aren't rolling as well. And that resource management is also handy to trigger big combos like other popular roll and writes.
Yeah.
So I thought the mechanisms, it stayed true to it without adding too much fluff. And that alludes into flow because I like that each round was distinctly different with not being able to transfer over resources you previously collected. And we would pull out the three realms, read the rules, so we were both on the same page, and then we would just start rolling. So it was pretty effortless to get in a full game of this. And I think that's a testament to the flow.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, and then it's everybody's turn at the same time too, on top of that. So there is essentially no downtime unless somebody's just taking longer that turn for whatever reason.
Yeah. And for us, when we played it, it was never like that. It wasn't like I was waiting for her. She was waiting for me, and we were still kind of using our resources and stuff like that. So I think that was a huge plus, which then gets into length of game.
Length, yeah.
The box says 30 minutes. I'm curious, did you think your games took 30 minutes?
Ours were all three of ours, I felt, were longer than 30 minutes.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, I thought so. I don't know if they were. They felt longer than 30 minutes.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So I think the length was a little bit long. Because I did say that there was variability with the mechanisms, but also there was a little bit, but not a lot. The game still was, you know, it's just roll and write. So I thought that the third round was a little too long for me. I would have been fine with two rounds.
Huh. Okay. But. See, I disagree. So we timed it, or I timed our game of two players, and it was the first time me teaching the game to Veronica.
Yeah.
It took 30 minutes exactly. So that was a quick overview of the game itself, and then we did each round.
Wow.
We did the specific teaching of the three cards, and it still was exactly at 30 minutes. And I think it didn't overstay its welcome. It wasn't like it was a bear to get through. If it was only two rounds, I would have wanted more. You know, it wouldn't have been enough for me.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know what the time was. It was just the feel to me was that it was longer than 30.
Yeah.
But, I can understand that. And the point of the three rounds is also that you do everything except for one, I think, right? And of the realms, two realms.
Because there's 11 total. We'll get into that a little bit later when I did some fancy math. Yep. So,
Next is fun. And I think that kind of might be kind of where the difference lies for us, is that I think that's why it felt a little long to me, is that I just felt like I was just kind of going through motions of it. It wasn't super rewarding resource management. I specifically like when my little scythe comes out. That's the round I like, because that's when I get to use the combos. But I mean, that's my issue, is I wanted to be able to use these pumpkins and hearts and coins, and I didn't feel like those were that big of an element of the game. 'Cause isn't there also one where you're trying to not use them or something like that?
Yeah.
Like you just want to stack them up but not use them.
I don't think there's a realm of that. There is a realm, I think it's Charterstone maybe, where you're trying to get at least six of each resource in order to gain two stars.
No. That's my little scythe.
No, that's my little scythe. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't think any of them penalize you for using your resource.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe not.
But interesting, because
yeah, I think they're just wasn't enough. It was too simple, I think, for me, for what I wanted.
I almost feel like this is a miss that you and I didn't play this game together in person, because I'd like to see your technique. I'd like to see how you play it, because I absolutely disagree. Oh, is that how you roll the die?
And then I write right here.
Yeah. I don't think you're utilizing those resources like you should, because I disagree with you. And this is one of the few times. So when I write my reviews for fun category, I'll usually write yes with a question mark. This is one I actually wrote absolutely, because as listeners have heard before, I love a good combo building game. This one has it, believe it or not. So it does have a little bit of luck base. I'm not going to admit that it doesn't, but it also offers that eureka moment. You're going to gain something that you weren't expecting to gain. So you're going to roll. Great. I got a six. I needed a six for this realm. Oh, that then gives me this resource to then go back and I can get, like, you can use a coin. You can use one coin to get a one pip die, which then you can spend two pumpkins to make that into a two pip die, which then you can use a different, it could use like three hearts, then use it in a realm you've already used before, yeah. Whatever. Like, you have the ability with just resources alone to create an imaginary third die to use either in a realm you haven't used it in or in another realm that you have. I think those resources are critical for that. And I think that is what offers that combo building that I love, especially by, like, it was usually the sixth, seventh, eighth turns. I was just so excited because I would, I could do this. I could do this. I could do this. And then by the ninth one, you're like, I just hope I get a one or I hope I get a three or whatever to meet this last star.
Yeah.
Because I don't know. I loved it. Now that alludes into, I usually throw the solo into this fun category, and the solo version. Did you read the rules for that?
No.
Okay. It's interesting. They called it putt-putt. Yep, that's what they called it, putt-putt, or miniature golf for those other fans out there. But really what this is, it's a specific objective to meet. You're going to use three realms that they tell you to use with a certain set of turns, say seven turns instead of nine, and you're going to have to gain a certain number of stars. Because I think the first round, the first hole there is seven turns, you have to get at least 11 stars, something to that effect. And there's 18 different scenarios in the box with ways of changing the variability. Now, I really did enjoy this for the puzzle that it offered.
Yeah.
And it is very luck-based, which is a huge turn-off. Like we talked about a couple episodes ago, the game Dynogenics, which had solo puzzles, but it was very luck-based, and I did not care for that. But given how quick it is to reset this and do everything, I didn't mind the luck based in this puzzle style solitaire game. But at the end of the day, it still falls into the category for me that I wouldn't play it solo since Veronica likes it. So but I still would recommend it for solo only gamers because I think it is enjoyable.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this looks actually kind of like the solo type of stuff that I like, the certain objectives to meet and try and puzzle through.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's kind of similar to, like I said, for Onirim, was that it's just a little bit on the lighter scale for my solo preference. I mean, I barely play solo at all, but yeah.
Yeah.
So,
but it's also a testament as a side tangent of, remember that day I told you I was waiting for my parents to arrive before the wedding?
Oh,
I had a time to play a solo game, and I didn't play this. I played Hadrian's Wall. You were surprised.
Which, I mean, I was not crazy about Hadrian's Wall, but I think I would, I mean, solo, I would rather play Hadrian's Wall than this, for sure.
Yeah.
But that's not, you know, sorry.
Yeah.
We're not there yet.
But it does allude into replayability.
Yeah.
So for me, I think it's extremely high. And this is where I did the math. So there are 11 realms. So there's actually a combination of 1,331 different combinations over the three rounds.
Yeah.
11 squared, right? And I think it's also super easy to bring back to the table, given the compact design and easy to remember rules.
I'm just checking your statistics because it's just 11 choose three, right? Is the number of possibilities.
Right. 11 times 11.
That's 165 in the first round. I don't know. I never remember.
It's 11 cube because you got three, because there's three rounds, but there's, each round is three distinct cards, and there's 11 cards. I don't know.
Yeah, so it's like 11 choose three, and then the next round would be 8 choose three, and then the next round would be 5 choose three. But I don't know what you're supposed to do, if you're supposed to add all of those or multiply those.
I don't know. Math was
long. But whatever. There's a lot. Yeah, you're right. There's more than 100.
There's a lot. That's it.
More than 100, less than a million. Somewhere in there. Hey, there's more numbers it could not be than numbers it could be. Okay.
It's not 11.
Yeah, so I think it's highly replayable. I think it has a lot of variability, or I don't know about a lot, but a good amount of variability in the setup. Yeah, I don't know. My personal likelihood to play it again, I'm going to play it when my in-laws come in town,
because
it'll be, you know, a good one to teach. Maybe when my parents come into town, actually, will be a good one. But yeah.
And I know your in-laws really do like Rolling Rights. Your father-in-law, right?
Yeah. He likes he got Cartographers a day earlier than us. Side tangent. And we backed it on Kickstarter. He pre-ordered it from their website. That was the first time I've ever been miffed about Kickstarter. Usually I say I don't care, but I never know the person who gets it before me.
Yeah. How about that?
when you know the person, it's different.
So how about we go into our overall thoughts and how do we score at Meeple Night?
Sure. Here on Meeple Night, we score on a 5-point categorical scale, starting with 1, which is not fun. I would pass if asked to play. 2 is game is okay, but not likely to hit the table. 3 is a good game worth playing in the right situation. 4 is a great game, almost always willing to play and need to have access to it. And 5 is an amazing game among my favorites. Must own it.
So
that wasn't crazed. Sorry.
I was just going to say, I think it's interesting that I think you and I are going to have differing scores here, and I'm going to be the higher of the two.
Yeah.
So let's get into the actual specifics. So it turns out, I think Rolling Realms is a really fun roll and write. And this is with the caveat that Veronica and I are very much roll and write style gamers. So we were glad to find one that we could add into the mix. Now, I can see us bringing this with us to breweries or a quick game at a restaurant, given the small footprint. And despite some of the production issues, I still would recommend this game to others, including solo gamers. So at the end of the day, Rolling Realms gets a 4 from me.
Nice. So for me, this is, I don't know, there's two, I don't know if they're caveats, but things I'd like to do to elucidate on what I'm going to say. One is we also like Rolling Rights a lot. So this is kind of being scored to me, like in comparison of other Rolling Rights, I guess. And then does it fulfill something that one of my other Rolling Rights doesn't do for me, you know? And the other is just, I mean, the last, review or episode, I didn't play any new games. And then this one, I only played digital games. So I've just kind of been in a funk right now with gaming, where with my free time, I want to read. I'm just really into reading right now. So I don't know if I'm just in a funk too. Like, this might be a really good game that 6 weeks ago, Andrew would have given a 5. Who knows? But Andrew is not giving it a 5.
You gave Paleo a 3. God. Awful.
That was a happy Andrew. This is a sad Andrew. Oh,
it's because you haven't seen me other than the wedding.
Yeah. I should have played this with you, I guess. Yeah, just being on that kind of high and then coming down, you know, it's hard. So, yeah, for me, this is really hard. This is between a 2 and a 3 for me. I don't know if I can go down to 2 because it is going to hit the table again. I want to give it a try because I do think I'm just kind of in a funk. But we played this, we played it before the wedding, and I've wanted to play it. I've mentioned it a couple times, but we just never really played it again. And so that is also kind of a sign to me of that it's probably between a 2 and a 3 because we've had the opportunity and decided not to. So I'm going to stay at a 3, though, that it's worth playing in the right situation because I do think that I like introducing this kind of as another roll and write to my father-in-law. And I think I'm in a funk more than that this is a bad game. So I don't know, which is kind of just means Andrew refuses to give anything less than a 3.
Yeah, I mean, if you would have given this a 2 with Paleo being a 3, I may have Nicole be my new co-host.
Okay, it's two.
Oh, that's it.
That'll be way less work for me.
But I see what you're saying, because in the same thing as another tangent is when I went home to see my parents on the way back from the honeymoon, we played a bunch of Rolling Rights because that's all the games I had in my carry-on luggage. And yeah. I did not choose to play Rolling Realms with them.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't think that this is one that I would choose over. I mean, we're going to talk about Rolling Rights specifically, but of any of my Verbin Rights, if I get to include all my Verbin Rights, this is never going to get picked. And even if I have to just pick Rolling Rights, I don't think I would pick this. But and that's why I have a hard time. Because it's not likely to hit the table as far as Rolling Rights go.
That's fair.
Also, that's not fair because it's a Rolling Right and I like Rolling Rights. And if I didn't have any others, would it then be more likely to hit the table? I don't know. So that's why I'm between two and three. So.
Gotcha.
So, but landing on a three.
All right, then. Well, Rolling Realms, you've earned a score of a 7 from Meeple Knight. So let's mosey on over to figure out what Rolling Rights Andrew does like.
And finally, we will discuss our top Roll and Write games. If I can find my list, maybe we'll be able to talk about it. Just kidding. All right, so this is one that I think was kind of an easy one to add to our discussion topic list because we like to, you know, mesh them together, marriage them with the review game if we can. Josh is the one who thinks of these things. So
I like the theme between it. So, yeah. And both of us play quite a lot of Roll and Rights. And the reason is they're easy to get to the table, easy to remember the rules, and typically enjoyable without needing a theme. Now, my list, we had talked about it. All these are going to include dice, because if you don't have dice, you can't roll. So no Roll and Write. It would be a Verb and Write.
So
that's our caveat. And the other thing, we're going to go back to actually ranking. So our number one game will be our favorite, best overall, whatever you want to call it. This is the best Roll and Write in our opinion.
Yeah. And I will say that for me, there's pretty much just two tiers. Like there's three of them. I think it's three. Yeah. My top three are all so close and my four and five are they're close together too.
Okay.
So it might just depend on the day that I might flip them, but
okay.
Basically, if I just won it, then it's probably number one. If I just lost it, then it's number two. You know,
that's fair. Well, you have an honorable mention for the list. jumping right in.
No, I did.
Got him.
Yeah. My honorable mention is Alchemists, the dice game, which exists in my mind and is going to exist someday, but it doesn't yet. I told you I was bringing sass today. It's totally doable, man. This is a Roll and Write game that can be done. You can play Alchemist solo. And I was fiddling around with it one day. And then I was like, this is going to be a lot of work. I'm not designing this. But there should be a designer who could do this.
Yeah, his name is David Turchi.
or that guy, Matus Kotri. You know, he could do it too.
Ugh.
He designed the app. He's actually a software developer at board game and board game designer, but that's his only game. Anyways, he's clearly capable, mathematically minded.
Yeah. And all you need to do is write the code or the algorithm in order to run the AI.
So that's my number one game as soon as it comes out.
Jesus.
But it's not out yet. So it's an honorable mention.
All right. Well, I think it's weird that you and I were sort of going in the same realm with our honorable mentions. My game is not out, but it does exist. It's not made up in my fictional brain.
I know that. That's why I said, I know.
Yeah.
Because you said you were going to do one that's not out. So I said, me too.
Yeah. Well, so this game is called Riverside, which is designed by brothers Elif and Asmund Svensson and published by Chili Fox Games, which is an awesome publishing name. Chili Fox, that's great. Who doesn't love chili and foxes? It's perfect. Anyways, this is a tour guide on a river cruise through an exotic winter land where you're going to use dice to manipulate heat levels to travel down the river and also allow guests to venture onto land to see animals. And it has an interesting use of die, and it looks like it's a really exciting game. Erato did a playthrough of it. A few other content creators are starting to talk about it because I think it may have came out at Essen, or it's starting to hit over in Europe at this point.
I think that's what it is. It's in Europe, but for shipping reasons, it's not here yet.
Yeah, because Europe's actually getting games before us now, which is usually unheard of.
Yeah.
But this looks like a really fun game. As soon as it comes out, I'm excited to at least try it. It looks like it's got a lot of replayability, and this game actually does exist.
and that is a positive. Yep.
Shots fired.
And this game does exist. All right. So enough with the shenanigans.
Number five.
All right, my number five. Oh, hey, before we talk about games, how many crossovers do you think we have?
Three.
I think so, too. I think it could be two, depending on how you want to define it, but I think it's two or three.
Yeah, it depends on which edition, which expansion, or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, yep. Yes. All right, so my number five, which I believe will be, I think it's a crossover. Is Railroad Inc. I forgot to write down the publishers and designers, I'll get that in a second. But
it's fine. I didn't list all the games on my list are ones we've discussed in the podcast before, okay, so I didn't include designers or publishers. Yeah. I didn't do it.
Okay, great. So see previous episode. Listen to whichever episode it was on.
Episode I don't even three.
Probably something one through three. Yeah. If it's on episode one, though, don't actually listen because the audio is terrible on that one. All right. Yeah. Sorry. So, yeah, Railroad Inc. is, you know, you're rolling dice that have railroad routes on them and you're drawing routes of railroads or car highways and you're trying to connect them to exits on the edge. If you play the Challenge Edition, which is, I don't have the base edition, though I have played it at your house. Yep. I would play either one. I think they're both fine. I think the Challenge isn't particularly hard and also doesn't add so much that I'm like, oh, that's the only way I would ever play this game. Though I do like the addition of the objective cards. So I guess the Challenge is the way I prefer to play.
Gives you some direction.
Yeah, I like that this has some sort of spatial little puzzle to it. So that's my number five, Railroad Inc.
All right, we'll see if it hits my list a little bit later. Maybe, maybe not. Alrighty. There's a bunch of rolling rights out there. And for my number five, so I've broken everything into categories. So this category is the heavier roll and write. And that's going to go to Dinosaur Island Roar and Write. Which I think is going to surprise you because I bet you thought I was going to say Roman Roll since I had sang that game's praise earlier in this podcast. Yeah. Like that was episode one or two or something like that.
Yeah.
Well, Dinosaur Island Roar and Write. It's just like I mentioned last episode. It's fantastic. It offers Dinosaur Island as well as Dinosaur World into one neat little package that's soloable, still enjoyable. This one beats out Welcome to Dino Island or Dino, whatever that other one was that you and I played. Although I did like drawing the dinosaurs on that, but who cares? It's a really neat game. It gives you a really meaty experience while still rolling dice. And there's a picture. I think I might have only sent it to Nicole, but I was playing this game and one of the die rolled out of my dice tray. Cheddar got a hold of it and took off into the yard and actually went to our neighbor who took a picture of Cheddar having the die in her mouth.
Jeez.
Yes. So it's a neat game.
So Cheddar also likes Roll and Write.
She's chosen Dinosaur Island specifically.
Welcome to. Yeah.
No.
Or whatever. Roar and Write.
Roar and Write.
Yeah.
All right. Well, number four.
All right. So my number four is one that we've played together, but I don't think will be on your list. But we have discussed it on this podcast. That's On Tour. So that is, what's that about? You like it better than I thought, or exactly the amount that I thought?
Probably less than you thought. I think
I didn't think you liked it. I didn't think it was in your top five. I like the push your luck element to it, of, you know, trying to connect as large of an area as you can and trying to balance whether you want to put the number that the dice roll in the exact city that the cards allow you to, or you can do the region. If you put it in the exact city, then you get 2 points. If you just do the same region, then it's only 1 point. And so I like that. And then that can cause you to have to try and connect this really spacious route across the US or Europe. I also really like geography, so I'm sure that plays an element. We're just looking at maps and countries and stuff gives me little happy feelings inside.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, this
nerd alert.
Yeah, this one did not make the cut. Yeah. I
didn't think it would.
There's a lot of times I've gone over to your house, I've played a game of yours, and be like, I've loved it. I'd go and look and try to buy it. And this one, forgettable.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Yeah, it's okay.
Well, let's see what you thought. I don't think you've played my number four, so it's not going to be a crossover. But this is the category that's going to be better than the original game. Now, you could say Rolling Realms fits that realm for me, right? That category. But
better than all of the games.
No, it doesn't. But this one does. And that's Castles of Burgundy, the dice game.
Ugh. I'm just kidding. I haven't played it.
Yeah. It's really good. We've played it quite a few times. This is one, it actually did not make the cut for us to bring on the wedding or for the honeymoon trip. And I think that might have been a mistake. Like, we easily could have played this game. It's neat. We really enjoy it. And I still have the color problems, so I will admit that. But the game is so good. And it's modeled, I hate to say this, Steffenfeld made a really good original game. But I'm not going to pull that game out when I have this game.
Yeah.
Especially, at least for two players, one or two players, because you can solo this game. But we'll get into that a little bit later about best solo game.
It's you can play it solo, but it's not the best of your list.
Yeah.
All right.
Number three.
All right. Number three is one we have played together again. I think we have played all of these together. Nope. There's one we haven't played together. And that is Rajahs of the Ganges Dice Charmers. I don't think this is on your list either, but maybe I'm wrong. This one is basically, I think we talked about it two or three episodes ago, has that really combo-tastic feeling that you get from the Clever series, but without, it's not just straight numbers. And the drafting mechanism is a little bit different because everybody gets one die every round. And you're only taking one dice away from people and not really fully away. So I think that's kind of slightly different puzzle, but still pretty thinky and combo-tastic. And so that's why I love me some Rajahs. So this is the first one in that second really high tier list for me.
Gotcha.
Of the Roll and Rights.
I do like it. This one actually did make the cut of Roll and Rights to go on the honeymoon with us. We didn't play it.
Ooh.
But I do enjoy it. I think I enjoy it more than Veronica does. But I think the rules were just a little bit too much her initially, and then now that she understands the rules, I'm pretty sure she can start kicking my butt. I like it. I think eventually, if we ever come back to this of Roll and Rights, I think it would make my top five. But as of right now, after I've played it four or five times at this point, it's not there yet.
Yeah,
but it's solid. I'm going to give you credit to that. I'm not going to disagree, like on tour.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
this is where I start to get nervous if you don't have a crossover.
Yeah, we'll see about that. the top two are definitely crossovers for sure. So my number three is actually the first crossover we've had. And this category for me is going to be love to play despite sucking at it. And that's Railroad Inc.
Okay.
Yeah. So I don't know what it is. Veronica is insanely good at this. What was the term I used before? Assassin?
Yeah. I don't know that that's the term that you call people who are good at building roads, but yes.
Or rails.
That is what you did.
Yeah. She is very good.
Civil engineer.
Well, that was just like when you played with us that one night is her and I tied. And then she had the tiebreaker to beat me. Like that's how it always is. My best games, it's she still wins. And but still, Railroad Inc. is a fantastic game. I've taught it to my mom. We've played probably four or five games with her. And I've also taught it to Jeff and Rob at the bachelor party. I think it's a fantastic game. It's a little more difficult of a rules teach, but sometimes you just kind of have to play a couple of rounds. Be like, oh, this makes sense. I know what I'm trying to do now. And for the average gamer, the standard blue and red boxes will work. For a more seasoned gamer or somebody that wants a little more of a challenge, I think you're right. The challenge additions are necessary. And despite getting it on Kickstarter, I've yet to play any of the addition of the extra dice and all that stuff. I mean to.
Oh, yeah. All the arcade and all that stuff. Yeah.
Or the big board. Have you seen that? Instead of it being like a 16 by 16, it's a 32 by 32 or something.
Yeah, that I would worry about that being way too long of a game, but I don't know what the rule is. If you just play with more dice or what?
Yeah, you play with more dice.
Oh, okay. So maybe it wouldn't. I mean, it would be longer, but just not more rounds necessarily. Yeah, I mean, I like the, you know, all the different ways you can play too. Each color box comes with two different like light yellow and dark yellow, which, you know, you don't play with both of them at the same time, so there's no colorblind issue, but it just tweaks the game just a little bit. And I think if you don't play with those, it's a fairly straightforward, like the base box without any of those is pretty straightforward.
And we've played base Railroad Inc. more. We've probably played it 50 times, just the base. Jesus. No expansions and stuff like that. It's easy to play. You sit there and you'll play it like six times.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, yeah, I know you guys do that. We're not that kind of gamers. Mm. We never play anything more than like once in a row, which I don't know if it's called in a row anymore.
Yeah, that's not. All right, well, let's see what these crossovers are. Let's see what your favorite game is. If
guaranteed.
We got a crossover there.
You want to do number one first?
Nah, let's do number two. So
Number two. My number two, which must be your number two as well then, because I think this is your favorite solo game. It's Fleet the Dice Game.
Hmm.
Fleet the Dice Game. Makes me want to play Fleet the Card Game, but I never have. I don't remember. What are you rolling? Five dice, I think. And I have the cool little lighthouse that makes me feel cool when I drop in the dice lighthouse. And in a solo game, it's three.
Yep.
It's two times the number of players plus one. Yep. That's what it is. And you draft one, and then it's three in a two-player game.
Yep.
It's the number of players plus one.
Yep.
You draft one, and then the other person drafts one, and then you both get whatever the leftover one was. And I like, it has this unique thing that I don't think any other Roll and Write has that I have played, where you have the shipping side and the wharf side or the village side. And so you're kind of playing two different games with the dice. They do work together and they combo together, but they're different. You need to be aware of what you're doing on both sides. They're not completely different, but like you can have really good rolls on your fish side and then just have crappy rolls on your village side. And just when you play solo and your village does crap for you, but you know, so that's, I really like Fleet the Dice Game. I think, oh man, I don't know. This might even be a level above Raja's. There might be like Raja's in the middle and the top two. I don't know. Doesn't matter.
All right. So do you think we're,
I think we're, I think you've meshed. I think two is your fleet and one is
a different game.
The clever. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I have to admit, you're right. So this category, this category I've come up with is best roll and write using two sheets. Yep. And best.
What, that's
yeah. And it is
best roll and write about fish that starts with an F and has a colon in it.
Yeah, I mean,
it goes to Fleet the Dice Game.
All right, so the Dinosaur Island Roar and Write, that has two sheets. Believe it or not. And a few other roll and writes are starting to come out with things that has two sheets. That's why I specifically said, like, it's not in a category by itself, but it deserves to be the best within that category. And I agree with the solo. I've played it solo. I've played it two players. It's very enjoyable. And I think the thing that makes me love this game more than anything else is that third die, that leftover die we all share. So if you're that second person, you could be like, all right, I'm going to get both of these actions, but what do I want to prevent you from getting?
Exactly.
Yeah. I love that shared die. And it's a fantastic game. This was going to be added to the Honey, I Was Wrong series of a theme for banter because I was wrong. You said this is a great game. I should try it. And you were, you nailed it. You told me to play this. I did, and I loved it.
It's one of the, you know, somehow we disagree a lot of times, but Roll and Rights for whatever reason, I guess.
Rolling Realms.
Yeah. Yeah, not that one, I guess.
Well, let's go ahead and talk about our number one, which is definitely shared. So number one.
All right. So number one for me, I'm just saying the Clever series.
Oh, that's a mistake.
Because Clever Hochdry is actually my favorite of the three. And then
Bring on Gons, Nicole.
And Dopolt is probably, I guess Dopolt. It might be Railroad Inc., but that'd be it on this list. It'd be five or six. But yeah, they're all that same mechanism. And it's just kind of, you know, tracing those combos across pure mathematics that's rewarding and not a difficult teach. I think Dopolt, the reason to me that it's such a bad taste in your mouth is because you've played Gon so many times. That once
like 100 times,
right? So once you play Dopolt, you don't have the natural like understanding of all the combos that you do with Gons.
Yeah,
and so it hurts it. Like, oh, there's no way you could be good at this game. Well, there is if you played it 50 times like you did Gons, and it's just hard to put that work in once you've already done it. You know, it's like I never wanted to learn how to snowboard because I was already good at skiing. Why would I learn how to snowboard? That's a waste of my time. And that's a fact.
Wow. I can't rebuttal that.
About one. Andrew.
Wow. You should have had that in the, this is Andrew in episode one. I'm good at skiing and I have no interest in learning snowboarding
I don't think I'm good at it anymore. But when I was younger, that was my thought process. I can already do every hill that's here. And why would I go back to the bunny hill? That's stupid.
All right. Well, at least I'll chime in with that's pretty clever. So the categories I came up with, so the Oscars or whatever, I hate those award shows, but this is what I came up for. That's pretty clever is best overall. That makes sense. So with it being number one, best family roll and write, best theme.
And the best makeup goes to.
Yeah. But seriously, I've played this. I've taught a lot of people this game. I actually played it with my parents this past weekend. So this was one of them. I ran through and like showed them some of the games. And we played Silver and Gold. But that's a flip and write. So that doesn't meet this criteria. Right. But we also played That's Pretty Clever. And in fact, my dad destroyed us. I did help him decide, hey, maybe you should use that purple six now. Yeah. So that way you can start anew. I did do some guiding with him. But even more so, he beat us. He did extremely well and won. So I think now that I know that's pretty clever or twice as clever or whatever, I have no interest in playing that again. I don't even want to look at the third one because we've played this 100 times.
Yeah.
We're going to continue to play it. This was one, you think about roll and rights, is we always laminate them. And this is one that I actually took the sheets to Staples to have it done before I bought my own laminator for all this. Because this was this and Cartographers were the two games that were like, I want to laminate a few games. What are we going to pick? And we picked those two.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that's a point that I didn't hit on about this one is the accessibility is a huge factor for this, that I've played this with a large variety of people and like types of gamers and had success with it because it's very easy to teach, but still has a lot of room for you to learn how to or think and do those brain burning puzzle combos. And yeah, I this is a good one. This for me would also win the even though I'm not good at it or whatever you label that.
I don't think I've loved to play despite sucking at it.
Yeah, I've only beat Nicole at this once, so
Actually, now you're curious. I want to see the breakdown. I think Veronica is better at it than me.
I think you might have been there when I beat her. No, it wasn't with you. That was with Brian. It was with Brian. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm curious. Let's see. That's pretty clever. We've played it. All right, so the win percentage, I'm currently sitting at four. We've literally played it 100 times. I'm winning 46% of the time.
Yeah, so that's pretty even.
Yeah. So.
Well, and then you played with other people too, so.
Yeah. You're right, because my percentage with Veronica, or Veronica's win percentage is 58%. But she didn't play with my parents and all that stuff. So yeah, all that. We're going to ignore math. We already tried to do some math earlier, and I think we failed at it. So hopefully we'll wrap things up by saying, hopefully that gives all the listeners out there, these are the top rolling rights, and we've got more crossovers than we expected. Right? No, we had three. We had three. We both said three. But it also gives you a sense that we do have some differences on tour, and we also have some games that somebody needs to play. Like, I think you would like Dinosaur Island Roaring Right, believe it or not.
Yeah. I mean, I do think I need to try here.
Yeah. But Roaring Rights are a fun little game. Quick to pull out on a weekday, and it's easy to set up and it's easy to tear down. And usually they come in baggies, so it makes Andrew excited. But
they do not come in baggies.
Some of them do. Or you can actually just put them in baggies.
Yeah, you can put your, like the whole game could be in a bag. Yeah, that'd be great.
Although I'm thinking about getting a photo box from Michael's that has like 12 or 16 different like little small cube cases, like VHS type stuff, and you just throw games in there.
Think about how much fun that would be as a game. You just dump all your board game contents into a giant baggie to move them. And then when you get to your new house, you have to sort through all of your board game components and put them back in the correct box.
I'm pretty sure there are games that exist like that. Just like that one game that came out, Shelfie Stacker or whatever.
Yeah.
No, you get to design how you want to put your games in your Calyx. Yeah.
50,000 piece puzzle. Here you go.
Oh, that would be fun. Well, thanks again for tuning in to Meeple Night. Feel free to give us a shout out on social media, on Instagram, and tell us your favorite Roll and Rights. Send any...
Don't do this to me. Don't do this to me. Don't make me do your sign up.
Oh, God.
I can't do your sign up. I can't do it.
All right, fine. You do the normal.
Send us your emails to meeplenightpodcast@gmail.com or follow us on Instagram. Thanks for listening, everybody.
And we will see everybody in a fortnight.
Yeah, good night.
And good luck.
Thanks for listening to Meeple Night. Today's episode was recorded in Charlottesville, Virginia on November 12th, 2021 and uploaded using Anchor. Our theme music is All Night by Declan DP, provided by Audio Library Plus, which provides free and safe music for content creators. For all the latest from Meeple Night, follow us on Instagram, join our Facebook group, or email us at meeplenightpodcast@gmail.com. We'll be back in 2 weeks. So until then, dream a little dream of games.